But look at in your personal setting, how many gadgets do you have that you don't use? How many maybe apps you've downloaded from the App Store or from whatever phone you're using and you're not using, right? So the same thing, I think companies, they fall into this habit, bad habit in my mind, where you invest heavily in tech, but you don't put the people and the processes behind it to get the most bang for that buck. Whether it's an accounting system, whether it's a CRM, whether it's Google Analytics, whether it's a Marketo, whether it is Moengage, it doesn't matter.
Get ready to deep dive into the world of digital transformation, where we explore the latest trends, innovations, and challenges shaking up industries. Join us as we decode the secrets behind successful digital strategies and hear from experts who are at the forefront of disrupting the status quo. In each episode, we'll unravel the mysteries of the digital realm and uncover the hidden opportunities that lie within. From artificial intelligence to blockchain, from automation to cybersecurity, we'll leave no digital stone unturned. But hold on tight, because this podcast isn't your average tech talk. We're injecting a hefty dose of wit and humor into every episode, making learning about digital transformation an absolute blast. So if you're ready to embrace the digital revolution with a smile on your face, tune in to the Digital Disruption Podcast and get ready to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Don't miss out on the fun. Subscribe now and join us on this wild digital journey. Hello and welcome to the Digital Disruption Podcast. Today, we're tickled to be joined by my friend and colleague, Ferris Ahlu. He's a successful entrepreneur who has had several successful digital marketing and digital analytics ventures, has successfully sold the company that he founded. And we're joined today to hear about some of the lessons and kind of strategic insights that Ferris can provide us about the landscape we all work in.
Hey, Patrick, pleasure to be here. Thanks for all the good work you do on the Digital Disruption Podcast.
Thanks, Ferris. Great to have you on the podcast today.
No, looking forward to a very hopefully productive session, and hopefully I'll learn a few things along the way as well.
I hope so. And I mean, hopefully you've tuned in enough to see Daoud and I tend to have a pretty good time today. It'll be you and I having a good time and, digging into some strategies, useful tips for our viewers and listeners. If you don't mind, maybe because you have a pretty significant background in this industry, I'd love for people to just have a sense, those who don't know you already, some of the background of the companies that you've founded and worked for, what you're doing now with Startup with Ferris, just so we kind of have the context of what you're up to.
Sure. Yeah. So we moved to Silicon Valley back in 1998, almost over 25 years ago, got into the startup scene, and then I was laid off. And in a way, I was forced into entrepreneurship. A friend of mine was thinking of starting a business, so we joined forces and we got into web development, web design, and soon thereafter, we got into search engine optimization and pay-per-click. Those were the cutting-edge things to sell at the time. So that's how I got into it. We focused on selling to small and mid-sized small businesses initially. And we had to learn sales and marketing and digital marketing at the time, and gradually started to specialize in analytics, and became a Google certified partner in analytics back in 2008.
Oh, wow.
One of the very early partners. And then later, fast forward to 2019, that's when we were one of the top resellers and top partners globally. And that's when we sold the business to Dentsu, the global media giant. And along the way, we started an office in Dubai, a small office that's now an amazing company that's now with the global reach in, Essence, Dubai, Germany, in the US. And I also chair the board for eSense, and I'm not involved day to day, but I work with Bashar and the team more on the strategic side of things, on the partnerships, and also on talent acquisition.
And in full transparency, I also worked at Enor and was part of that team. So Ferris and I have we've worked together quite a bit, and say on sales, on delivery, and everything in between. So yeah,
traveling to client sites and pitching and delivering and other things on the side as well. We'll link that to the podcast. But one last thing is that the last year and a half or so, we started independent of eSense. I started a startup with Ferris. This is my newest venture with my co-founder Eric, and we're helping early stage founders to build and grow businesses to get to 7-8 figures. And I just see patterns repeat all the time. And I figured at this stage, this season of my life, I want to share with others and share the mistakes I made. So I feel good if the founders that I'm speaking with are not doing the same mistakes I made. They'll make their own mistakes, but not the ones that I did.
That's fantastic. Nobody needs to reinvent the wheel. And I mean, if I, you know, I wear my heart on my sleeve. The Ferris's content is great content. If you haven't checked it out, and if you're in that world of startup and entrepreneurship, and you're trying to grow your business, I can say, you know, full sincerity, like it's worth tuning in. So yeah.
And I think this is where I think it, in terms of companies who are starting maybe their analytics practice, or maybe they've hit a wall with analytics, whether it's data collection or whether it's data visualization or whether it's analysis, what have you. I think that entrepreneurial mindset is the required. So if you're a CMO or maybe chief data officer, or if you're a marketing manager in a mid-sized company and analytics is under you, I think some of the points I'm hoping to share today about that maybe entrepreneurial spirit that you need to have, especially as whether you're building your analytics practice today or you really want to scale it. There are a lot of parallels between that and actually working with entrepreneurs who are building and growing their startups.
That's a really good point. Yeah. I've heard you say that, you know, organizations should be, you know, people focused as much as tech focused. So we have kind of a rubric of digital maturity here where we talk about your tech stack, your data infrastructure, your processes, and your people. And, you know, funnily enough, you know, even though we're talking about technology driven solutions, we, you know, Dawood and I spend a lot more time talking about process and people as well. So I wonder if you could kind of elaborate on why you think having that people focused approach is so important, even though we're in such a technical set of fields. Absolutely. In many cases.
I mean, technology is important. Technology is core, of course, but look at your personal setting. How many gadgets do you have that you don't use? How many maybe apps you've downloaded from the App Store or from you know, whatever phone you're using and you're not using, right? So the same thing, I think companies, they fall into this habit, bad habit in my mind, where you invest heavily in tech, but you don't put the people and the processes behind it to get the most bang for that buck. Whether it's an accounting system, whether it's a CRM, whether it's Google Analytics, whether it's a Marketo, whether it is Moengage, it doesn't matter. If you don't put smart people behind this technology to set up the right processes and the right workflows and educate users on how to use it and how to increase adoption, that technology will still sit in the corner, maybe in the virtual corner, untapped, or maybe you're untapping most of what you can get out of it. And that is common. That was common back in 2003. Yeah. And that is common in 2024. I think we've matured a lot as an industry, as a digital marketing, as a marketing industry in many ways. But it's sort of sad to say that we're still not where we need to be in other aspects of the business.
Yeah, for sure. How many hours do they say it takes to become an expert at something? I think
So
I've heard you quote that
10,
before, and
yeah, 10,000 hours, and I think it was made popular by oh my God, the name escaped me, but the person I think who introduced this was Carol Dweck in her book Mindset, and it's that road to mastery. It is a journey,
right.
and it's this 10,000 hours of deliberate practice that is
Right.
required. Now, not a caveat, but just keep in mind that if you have 9,950 hours, it doesn't mean that you're not a master, right? It's more of a continuum. So you're always
Yeah.
learning, but you really have to put the time as an organization, obviously as individuals, but as organizations, you got to put the time, you got to put the people behind the technology, to again collect data, to store data, to clean data, to visualize data, to make sense out of the data, to capture the
Yeah.
context about the data. That
Yeah.
requires organizational, I guess, muscles or organizational knowledge that is not just dependent on one individual,
Yeah.
but it is carried on in a way institutionalized so that it's just a matter of how we do business.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's so costly to some organizations if you run lean, right? And you do have, let's say you do have one superstar who kind of all the eggs are in his or her basket, right? And if that
Absolutely.
person leaves, it's extraordinarily costly to an organization, right?
Yeah, and I think the issue that I see when I speak with organizations is that at times it's okay to have a single point of failure because that's the only budget you have, that's the only
Yeah.
resource you have. You need that one Superman or what that one Superwoman on your analytics team to come in and have that passion and the skills and really take a lead on setting up that program or scaling up that program.
Yeah.
So that sometimes is all you have. But as if you want the analytics and the digital transformation program to scale, to be institutionalized, then you can't think of it as an initiative.
Yeah.
You don't think of it as a project. You don't think of accounting and invoicing as a one-off thing. So if you're serious, I think for executives out there, for marketing managers, for analytics managers, you want to make analytics, you want to make a digital transformation part of how we do business. If we want to capture emails, and we have different ways to capture emails from different maybe brands or different websites or different touch points with the customers, is there a process that's all that data that we're capturing is streamlined, is validated, duplicates are removed, metadata they're added. I mean, this is a simple example where a lot of organizations just don't have. So me as a user, as a customer, I get two emails with two different offers or an offer that's totally unrelated to what I need.
Yeah.
I've already upgraded to premium. So why are you sending me an offer for
Right.
10% if I upgrade to premium? Like something is missing. And I'm not
Yeah.
saying this is easy. I'm not, it's hard.
Yeah.
On one hand, you understand the concept, it's easy. It's the harder part is to make it part of the process, make it part of the day-to-day. That's how we run our business.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that that people and process component is really the core there, right? Of are those tools
Absolutely.
integrated? Are they implemented properly? I think there's a, and I'd love to get your perspective on this, but there's a time dimension to this as well. You said, you know, how many gadgets you buy and they end up on the shelf, you don't use them. And that analogy is really good in the business world. It's like you put the technology in place and then you put it on the shelf before you gave a realistic opportunity for ramp up time, or whether that was the skills your people need or just the accumulation of data, right? Or, you know, but talk, if you don't mind, your perspective on, like, they say the average digital maturity project is about a 6 month, right? If it's a serious digital, at least 6 months and maybe up to 18 months.
I
So
was going to
what
say
time?
more, my experience more like 18. Remember, Patrick, you and I in a previous life, we worked on this one customer. They had a UK-based business and a US-based business. And I believe, and we ended up going to London and enjoyed some really good company and good food and had an amazing 2-day workshop. They were really serious about digital transformation. And this is almost eight, probably 9 years ago.
Yeah.
But you had all the stakeholders. So we were the consultants,
Yeah.
and the person in charge brought us in to listen into the challenges that people were having with the current setup. They were actually really serious about it, so they hired for this. And it did take, I think, close to 2 years. It was a very complex setup. I don't want to
It
discourage
was.
people. They had two brands, very complex workflow, so many systems touching the user. Some of
Yes.
it, some of those systems are archaic. But long story short is they had a strategic slash C-level person spearheading this. And he was more of a consensus building type person. And he would call every other stakeholder involved, whether it's an internal stakeholder or a vendor like ours. We
Right,
were
right.
all partners. If you remember, Pat, he
Yeah.
used the word partner. We're all partners in this.
Yes.
And it took a while to get just some basic implementation, but we did a lot of that requirement gathering. Again, this is not to pitch consulting services to the listeners here. You can do this stuff in-house. You don't have to hire a consultant to come in and tell you what you need to do. A lot of times, if you have the bandwidth, you just need to dedicate the time back to people to go around every partner, internal partner now, every stakeholder where they're touched by your initiative, by data gathering or by using that data, see what their current pain points are, listen attentively to the challenge they're going through to maybe get that dashboard. And your job as the head of this strategic initiative or as an implementer to address those pain points,
Yeah.
you'll get a whole lot more support from this person if you tell them if it's taking you 5 hours to get this dashboard every Monday morning. At the end of this project, it'll be in your inbox by 9 a.m. on Monday. You are going to get a whole lot of support from them because you're
Yeah.
helping them. So it goes back to people, not just the technical aspect, but also the relationship building, understanding their perspective and maybe why they're hesitant to support you, all your stakeholders, and then go with the implementation and always, again, keep that people side of things in mind.
Yeah. And we like leadership here. We do sometimes tease CEOs on this podcast and make fun of jargon and MBAs and all those things. But we genuinely do appreciate the role of leadership. So I wonder if you could talk to that a little bit. You just alluded to it, but why is kind of having a kind of a North Star, a sponsor for change? You mentioned you can't really think of these things as a one-off project, right? You would never think of accounting as a one-and-done project. You also shouldn't think about your digital capabilities, digital maturity that way. Why is leadership important, and when it's done right, like what does it bring to these large-scale organizational change efforts?
Good question. The way I think about it is whether it's an analytics implementation, let's say it's, we work with at eSense and in the past, Patrick, with some of the world's most recognized brands, and they have different teams sometimes. They have multi different brands and different departments and different geographies. So when you come in to with an implementation, and you'll be touching seven websites in three different countries with three different brand managers. I mean, that's a small, maybe piece of code to add to a website, but it is a process change. And there's a privacy component to it. And if you have different geographies, there are different maybe guidelines. There's access to systems there. So the reason why you need someone strategic, someone with executive power or influence, because it's all about change and change management. So without a directive from the top, it'll be harder to really get the organization into changing the way they do things. Now, you can also do from the, I've seen it where amazing intrapreneurs, people who are really passionate about data and how you can improve the bottom line with better data and with actionability on the data. So you can start, if you're an aspiring I don't want to say aspiring entrepreneur. If you're really passionate about this and you care about the business, you can start an initiative in maybe a small, on a small website, and maybe not the number one brand for your organization. So you can do things that from the ground up. You can start something and show the results and show how you maybe improved the conversion rate by 20%, or maybe you gave more access to the user journey through connecting two systems together, maybe offline and online. You can do something from the ground up and maybe then win the vote and the budget and the support of an executive. But you do need the I think it's easier if from the top down you get a directive and initiative to do this digital transformation effort. And then someone who also themselves, if they've done it before, or maybe with the help of some seasoned consultants, put together a strategy on what has to happen first, who's going to be impacted when, priorities, resources, budget, that's all really important.
Yeah, you just said something that sparked a thought for me, which is, you know, the kind of grassroots, right? The doers, the people pulling the levers, they usually have the technical expertise and capabilities to make the change happen. They don't always have that authority to make the change happen. You definitely don't want to give your CEO the keys to your website and, you know, have your CEO making changes to your website and data infrastructure, right? That's a recipe for disaster. So
yeah, definitely don't do that. Yeah.
So he or she doesn't.
CEOs just don't do that. Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't want to do that. So so I think in some ways that the you said if you kind of have that hustle, if you're like an internal entrepreneur, to unpack your terminology there, right? If you kind of have that ambition to go after this for your company or organization, having the right leadership support you in that, but also designing solutions in a way that you earn the right in a sense you internally earn the right to have the credibility and that informal authority that when you say something is worth doing, people trust you, right?
Exactly. And I think that the grassroots approach is, and we used to do a lot of it and share that early on in the early stage of digital, in the early stage of the dawn of analytics. Nobody knew about this stuff, data, analytics, conversion rate, optimization. So those were new concepts back in, I don't know, 2006, 2007. So we had to have those success stories internally to get some budget. Not us as consultants. When I remember we'd get a lead, we'd get a call and say, yeah, I'd love to do this. I'd love to do all of this. I have an e-commerce website and I'd love to do all of this work, but I don't have a budget. No one believes in this stuff. Right. So we would actually, in a way, love working with a client like this because we share the same passion.
Yeah.
We pivoted, like we left, we used to do a bunch of stuff, web development, web design, SEO, PPC. So at Enor, not the other ventures, we actually dropped all of that in a span of a year and focused on analytics. We just love this stuff. And we saw the business potential. At the end of the day, there was good business for us. But when people came to us with little budget and little money and they have an idea in mind, we would bend over backwards to work with them and make sure they have an internal success story that they can take and evangelize. And more often than not, we would see a follow-up project later that is significantly larger because the business people, the decision makers, they saw the fruit of that little project. And I think they also sensed the passion of that internal entrepreneur.
They want
to see more of it, you know, across the organization. So that for those of you listening, you know, I'm not just saying passion will solve everything. You got to have the skills.
Yeah.
But you being energetic and also communicate, like you want to communicate those successes and tell stories internally and help others in other departments use data and make better decisions with data. Those, because they'll tell their bosses and they'll tell their bosses' bosses, and then you get a reputation for helping others and helping the business. Yeah. And that will get
and
you
let
more
them take credit for it. Make other people like make other people the hero, right? Like,
Exactly,
yeah.
absolutely. And you'll get more resources, you'll get more budgets, eventually you'll get more recognition. It works well for everybody. Not seen as easy, but this definitely a path that sort of grassroots up. And there's definitely, and I think that would be a bit more efficient and probably less maybe less struggles if it comes from the top. But it's, I'll say one thing, I think most executives, and I have some statistics on this, they're not top of my mind now, but they go to conferences, they talk about, they see all these case studies, how data-driven organizations are just achieving better and more success. They come back to the C-suite and say, we got to do this. But I think there's an underestimation and underplanning of what's involved to do this. So that's something I see as well.
No, that's really helpful. I think it kind of reminds me, in externally, like from a sales standpoint, we always used to talk about and still do talk about the land and expand kind of approach, right? Where it's like, yeah, you get that, somebody's willing to give you X amount of dollars on a limited engagement, small risk, prove yourself as a consultant or as a service partner. That same mentality, especially if people haven't worked with you a lot or you just haven't had that chance to shine yet, internally, you may find yourself in that same position. And somebody, yeah.
Absolutely. And for practitioners, for decision makers listening to this, do the same with consultants. So if you want to hire a consultancy, maybe start off with a smaller project. Learn about how they do and what they do. And so I think this concept of getting some business results, albeit small, but doing something and then have an internal success stories where we hired this consultancy, they came in, they helped us X, Y, and Z, whatever that is, client retention or better conversion rate or more stickiness, whatever the case might be, and being able to tell that story and educate people what's involved to do it right, I think it will serve everyone really well.
Talk about why is this, so this is really crucial in terms of, so when you've been given that opportunity, whether it's internally or as a consultant, services provider, whatever, talk about commitment, fulfilling on what was promised, kind of seeing it through to the end, actually delivering real value. How crucial is that to the success of these kinds of initiatives long term, whether you're an internal or an external resource.
I mean, if you don't deliver, what happens? I mean, it's easy to bring in a consultant and then fire them because they're a consultant. If you have someone in-house and they're struggling to implement, that's obviously not good. But I think you have as a manager, as a business owner, you have to look at what is, why is it that this initiative did not really pick off and was not adopted. It is easier. It's easy to point the finger at a person or at specific technology or at a consultant, a business, a partner. I think it is data, digital transformation, analytics. Now you're touching a lot of systems, and there's a lot of process involved to get to that pristine data that you want, or maybe to that integrated data. It just is a lot involved. So I think, commit to that process. Make sure you have the right people who have experience in where, I always say to entrepreneurs, you wanna get advice from those who have been to where you wanna go. There's a lot of advice out there. There are a lot of experts and maybe people who maybe fake it as experts, but people who have been to where you want to go, they're not going to give you the specific map like every step of the way because no two journeys are the same, but they will share with you a general direction. They will share with you, think of it more like a GPS than think Adam Grant in his book Hidden Potential talked about this. You don't need from a mentor, from a coach, from a consultant, you don't need the exact map because the conditions could be different. When they went down this path, it was sunny. When you're going down that path, it's cloudy, it's raining, it's snowing. So the journey is going to be different. But they can give you these experts, these consultants can share with you the typical challenges you'll face, the obstacles that you'll have to overcome, and they'll give you that general direction. So committing, you know, making sure you have the right people with you, those who have that experience, and the advice of those who have been, who have done similar journeys. So between the people who have that expertise and those who can put a roadmap for you, and then committing to that, that is more likely, you're more likely to succeed, because now it's a system, it's a process, and you have the right people behind it.
Yeah, that's really useful for sure. And sometimes I think of as, you know, having being somebody who's been on the consultant side of things a lot, is you'll get to somebody hired you, they thought you had some experience and expertise to bring to the table, right? And you give a set of recommendations and you all ultimately you negotiate a little bit and you agree, like, these are the requirements, right? Like, this is the data that's needed, or these are the integrations that are needed. And sometimes, you know, more often than we would like to admit, that project gets, you know, maybe it makes it to about 60 or 70% of what everybody agreed was the right thing to implement, right? So when you take the time to hire people to advise you, or if you're doing it internally, either way, I do think there's a need for a commitment to see these, like to actually see the roadmap through. And granted, we always have to be flexible to some degree, but it's really difficult. Like you had mentioned, like pointing the blame at different things, right? Like, but one thing that's never useful is pointing the blame at like half implemented or sort of abandoned technology or abandoned processes that weren't actually seen through via commitment, right? That's really frustrating, both internally and externally.
Absolutely. I mean, it is, I didn't think of it. I always, when I speak with entrepreneurs and, you know, executives and managers, I mean, think of things you do outside of work. Let's say you want to run a marathon. Let's say you want to get your black belt in jiu-jitsu or aikido. Let's say whatever the case might be, it doesn't happen overnight, and you have to train for it. You have to learn about it. You have to have the right nutrition and the right conditioning. And you watch stuff on YouTube on how people do it. And there's often the mindset, the resilience. You might have an injury. You have to pick yourself up and heal and then go back on the track. So the same thing, I mean, there are a lot of parallels. I think consulting, and I think even like analytics, there's a lot of science to it, and there's a lot of art to it as well. And a lot of these business processes, you really have to commit to them, and you might have to update those processes over time because things change. Yep. And you might have to get different type of talent because now you've scaled up, right? So I think committing, long story short here, committing to learning, getting advice from experts, and then defining your requirements, and you're really clear on when you want to get out of this initiative, and when you want to get out of this implementation, and then really giving the support for people to go and implement. That's really important. And if things take a little bit longer, well, maybe we couldn't get the code on the website or in the mobile app for 3 months because the developer doesn't like us. Once it, or maybe we could have been nicer to them, but maybe the developer has a mandate not to put code on the website because guess what? It is right before the holiday season. Don't touch the website. So understanding all these obstacles.
Yeah. Or has a sprint backlog that's so long that you can't get prioritized, right? Or whatever. Yeah.
And so this is where the executive sponsor is going to help. They can go and speak with the other executive. Hey, Jane, hey, John, this is really important. It will help you get better data if you help us implement. So you have to, like I said, I think getting advice from those who have been to where you want to go will help you at least be aware of these obstacles.
Yeah.
Because you'll encounter a few of them, if not all of them, and more.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this comes right back to the first point we talked about, which is being people-centric, right? The better you build relationships and rapport, credibility, include everybody in the process up front, the less friction you're going to have when you get to the point of implementing that as well.
Absolutely.
Here's a I we can kind of start sort of wrapping on a sort of a last topic that I have is how quickly do you think expertise and skills become stale in your experience? I mean, left to their own devices, yeah.
In 2003, when we got into the digital space, I think I would say maybe years. These days, so their technical skills, their soft skills, I mean, in terms of communicating with people, in terms of listening, understand people's
Yeah.
perspective, empathy, we all could use more of that. In terms of technical skills, I think things like there sometimes there's just new platforms. So let's say you're a digital marketer
All right.
years ago, and all of a sudden there's this thing called TikTok. What do I do? Do I put time into it or not? Well, depending on what Congress does in the US, maybe you made the right decision a few years ago. But I mean, go back 15 years ago when people were getting maybe on YouTube. Do I invest time into this platform? So there's always and then or I always use this example. What was that platform for messaging? Like it was oh my God, not video but on audio. What was it? What was it called? A couple of years ago, that listening platform where you can go like have huddles and it's audio only. Oh my God. Oh, the name escapes me now. But that, like, everybody was on it, like right away, and then didn't pick up. Sorry, the name escapes me now. But the idea is this, we're just seeing, I mean, look at ChatGPT, look at generative AI. If you, as a business owner, whether or as a marketer or as just a practitioner or as a consultant, if you're not already using AI in some fashion, not to generate a blog post for you, that's not an option. You can get ideas, you can maybe check your grammar, but if you're not leveraging AI one way or another in your process, I think you're already behind. If talking about Google Analytics, now Google, for a number of years, they've announced that they will be deprecating the universal version and now going into the latest version. That's changed now. That change is not happening overnight, but that's still a change that has to be that has to be you have to be ready for. And if you don't get your team, allow them time to take courses, maybe go to conferences, experiment with different tools, you're going to be stale very quickly. I would say in months on certain things. I mean, the foundational concept of data and how to have complete data, how to store data, how to manage data, how to keep it, keep, you know, I mean, but like privacy, the impact on privacy and data storage and data collection and data transfer. You don't want to be, it's not just that little banner that comes up on your website about cookies, right? That's important. But like all this, these, and we're seeing companies hit with big fines. So it's not just learning technology, but also getting legal advice. And then how do we take that legal advice and make it practical and make it a process? So learning never stopped. I think Peter Drucker said it best. He said, the number one competitive advantage that you have over your competition is learning and learning faster than them. So if we're not learning as individuals or as organizations, the competition will be ahead for sure.
Yeah, no, that's really
Long
helpful.
winded answer to say, I
No,
don't know
no.
exactly how to tell you, but all I'm saying is if I'm You know, if we're not learning, we are behind, especially in this day and day and age, and especially with like AI. And I'm not saying you jump. Every organization is different. Some of us are like want to live on the edge, and we try every new technology, and that's maybe just part of the DNA of the organization. And others, they take more time. I think the larger the organization gets, the maybe the less of that cutting edge, they become in terms of like adoption of technology. But you gotta be learning. You gotta be, staying up to speed with the development in technology.
Yeah, I mean, I think maintaining some innate curiosity is really important. Like, I mean, right? How do you see a piece of data and formulate like meaningful business questions out of that data, right? Like you have to have some curiosity driving you, right? And
Exactly.
I think one of the ways I like to think about it, I certainly didn't coin the term, but I like to think of it in terms of the risk or the cost of doing nothing, right? And there's certainly from a skills learning education that there's a huge risk, but I think also from the standpoint of the technologies we use and the processes we use, right? There's so much like more risk in the status quo than people really like to think of. But just the way consumer expectations evolve, the way the whole landscape will evolve around you. So just like exactly what you're doing today is never good enough over time, right? It's just not.
I mean, it's this book I read a couple months ago, Hidden Potential. It talks about some of these aspects, and a lot of time, like we have ideas. So there's the aspect of not learning, and also sometimes we know and we don't apply. So you have these. I think it was the former astronaut Jemison. She said, I like to think of ideas as potential energy. It's great to have. But until you risk putting these ideas out and put them to work, they stay ideas. So that's on one aspect. And the other side, sometimes like we're too shy to ask, or maybe sometimes we're too arrogant to ask. That I think inhibits our learning as individuals and also as organizations. So I think one thing I learned a lot from in the early days of us getting into analytics, and I encourage founders and business owners to always do is be out there. Like I used to go to all these networking events, and even when we could not afford buying the full price ticket for a conference, I would find ways to get into the exhibit hall and for like $50 or $100, and then just go and network and just be like a sponge and learn from others. And everything we learned, everything I would go around and hear from others, how do I improve my framework of implementing so I can help the client, you know? So learning is important. Otherwise, like you said, we become stale, and that's not good individually and not good for organizations.
No. All right, I'm gonna throw a curveball your way as we kind of close
Oh
out. And
no.
a question we haven't chatted about, but I mean, I know we've talked about this in general. So, I guess more of a philosophical one. How do we avoid the trap of sort of being mystified by data and technology? And kind of so, if we're an e-commerce website or if we're a streaming service, but at the end of the day, like there are people, there are families, there is society behind all these things, right? We're trying to sell products and services to people, and we circulate in an actual society that's real, tangible, that we all can touch. Like, how do we sort of keep like this reality that the data kind of represents at the forefront, like to actually have products and services that are worth buying and using?
You know, from a business perspective, I remember in the early days when we got into consulting and started to become trusted. Once we figured out what we're doing and became better at it, we became, I like to think of ourselves, I think that was a McKinsey line, like trusted advisors. And when we sign up for a project and we close the deal, and I always used to celebrate when we close the deal. What was very rewarding to me, and it still is when a client, we made someone's life easier. When someone was struggling, as I said earlier, spending 5 hours developing a dashboard, copying and pasting things in a spreadsheet, and we automated that for them, and they say, "Oh my God, you made my life so much easier." Or like at a more strategic level, you've helped a company really has significant impact on their bottom line. So to me, that was very rewarding, where I'm helping others with the work that we're doing. Although it might be very technical, it might be there's all this coding and all the process, and you're dealing with spreadsheets and dashboards. But at the end of the day, you're helping someone be better at what they're doing, and leveraging data to make these better decisions. And in turn, they're helping their clients have a better user experience. So that's how I see it. And I think If you're frustrated at a on an app that you're using as a consumer, you and I, if we're frustrated, you know, we're standing online and none of this stuff has been maybe digitized, and it can be like sometimes, dude, I'm like, why am I filling out of this form at this doctor's office? Like they know everything about me already.
Right.
Of course, since we're talking about a philosophical perspective, with data, there comes a lot of responsibility. That's where the privacy initiatives and you and I are consumers, just like we are marketers and analysts. So there is the responsibility of brands to also protect the privacy of the data that they have and the individuals that they deal with. So now I think there's a lot of creative ways, especially with the cookie deprecation wave that started before even, I left the last position I was in, and it's still continuing, will still continue. So, but that's where the creative minds come together and offer better solutions that will enable companies to, better address the needs of their customers. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question.
No. Yeah.
Maybe that was too deep for me, but that's
no, no. I'm just genuinely interested in your perspective on that. Cause I think, we always talk about data-driven, marketing, data-driven decision-making, all these different things. And at the end of the day, you still need to have a service or a product or an experience that somebody wants to spend their money on, right? You still need to tilt the price value equation, in favor of value, right?
Like, yeah. I mean, the airlines I travel, I have a mobile app, and I'm telling you, like over the last couple of years, I've noticed the enhancement in the app in terms of just from a user experience. Like as I land, they tell me where my luggage, like which terminals to go to, which gate to go to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like even now between, like if I'm going, let's say through Denver, right? They say, okay, here's where you land, here's where you go. And then there's the estimated walking time. Like that data wasn't available. And this is a simple example. Yeah. But if you're making my life easier as a consumer, I'm going to be more loyal. I'm going to be spending more money with you. And I think that's, to me, it's a win-win-win, for everybody involved.
Nice. I love it. Yeah. I think that's a great way to wrap it up. I think you've shared some really nice insights from your experience and kind of the work you've done in the past and the work you're doing now. Clearly you're advising a lot of growing entrepreneurs right now, and it really reflects in the perspective you're bringing. So we really appreciate you having on the Digital Disruption this week.
No, Patrick, thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me here. And I know you put a lot of time into these podcasts. So hopefully people who are listening will share this with others. And I know you've been around the block since the early, early days, the dawn of digital. So folks, tap into this this valuable resource here.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the kind words, and good to see you as always.
Have a good one.
All right, you too.
Bye. Bye-bye.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Digital Disruption Podcast. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the world of digital transformation and gained valuable insights to help navigate the ever-changing landscape. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us on our website, esens.com, or connect with us on social media. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting discussions on the forefront of digital innovation. Remember, the future is now, and it's time to embrace the power of transformation. Thanks for listening, and until next time.